Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to my Friday Five podcast, and this week I am really so delighted to be welcoming a woman onto the show here who's become one of our leading menopause warriors, Kate Muir. She started life as a campaigning journalist, covering so many issues from war zones to public health. She was a features writer for The Times in New York, Paris, and Washington, as well as becoming the chief film critic for the newspaper. Well, more recently, she turned her activist eye to the subject of the menopause, being the co-creator of the revolutionary Channel 4 menopause documentary, Sex, Myths, and Menopause, hosted, of course, last year by Davina McCall, and now she is publishing a blistering attack on the sloppy science and hysterical headlines, her words, with her own completely brilliant book, Everything You Need to Know About the Menopause, But Were Too Afraid to Ask, which is published this week. She says that she wants to name, shame, blame, and reframe the menopause with her book. And it's certainly an eye-opener that genuinely helps to move the conversation on. And I'm sure that many of you listening will identify with much of what Kate has to say. So I am delighted that she joins me here now as we indulge in a bit of menopause myth-busting. So, Kate, a really warm welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you here. And I think, you know, from what I was saying, my audience here especially are pretty well versed in most things menopause. But we're going to have a discussion, I think, that will take it on to the next level. So welcome to my Friday Five podcast.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on the show and be with you because you've campaigned so hard on the menopause and HRT front. So I'm glad we're all in this together.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, it feels like a sisterhood, I have to say. It was quite lonely at the beginning, but now it's just so normalized. And, you know, I've said this before, and I think, you know, Davina probably says the same, that when we first kind of came across menopause, nobody really wanted to talk about it, especially not people working in telly, in the public eye, because it was just so negative. Everyone just thought you were kind of old and decrepit, and it has been. And now I think we've smashed that, haven't we, really quite early on?
Yeah, we've smashed it. We've had a great deal of fun smashing it too, I'd like to say. I was at the HRT demonstration in Parliament Square last year, and it was just extraordinary to meet all those women who had campaigned together for 2 years over Zoom. And there they were from all ends of the menopause spectrum. And it was absolutely fantastic. And such a positive message we're putting out, because you can improve your health and here's how to do it.
Yeah, you're so right. Actually, there is no bad news here. The bad news is only if you can't get hold of the right treatment for you or the right bit of education. But let's go back and just cover off your background. You've come from a journalistic background, which I think is really interesting in this discussion because it's different to so many other campaigners. Tell us how you got here.
Well, I'm really surprised I've got here at all, actually. But as a journalist, I did things like writing a book about women in the army, whether they should go into combat. You know, I went out to the first Gulf War. I covered America. I covered France. And so I come kind of on a war footing to this and an investigator footing. And every day I have learned something new in the last 2.5 years studying menopause. And every day I've got angry at some point in the day at the lack of understanding out there and the medical sexism. So I was a journalist at the Times. I was the film critic. I left in 2017. I crashed into a terrible menopause, a proper Thelma and Louise off the cliff job. And I ended up getting all the wrong HRT privately, ended up having, biopsies. Everything that went wrong could have gone wrong in my bottom half. And then I went to, of course, Dr. Louise Newson, who prescribed me the right HRT. And while I was in her surgery, I turned from a patient to an investigative journalist in 5 minutes, because she told me a story which changed my life, which is one of her patients for 7 years did not leave her house. And she was diagnosed with depression. She got different kinds of antidepressants, and then suddenly she was given electric shock treatment, so electroconvulsive therapy, 12 sessions. She was left in a complete state, just sitting in a chair. And at one point she felt so depressed she was going to give up, and then she thought, I will research this. And she started researching hormonal depression. And she found out that, you know, menopause and perimenopause, which is what she was in, could cause incredible mental, you know, imbalance. And she got an RV and went to Louise Newson's surgery, because she couldn't leave home, she couldn't go outside, she was completely agoraphobic, so she actually took her own caravan there. Went in.
Oh my goodness, that's extraordinary.
Went in, got HRT, 7 days later, walked her dog outside for the first time. And she's in my book, and the story made me cry when I interviewed the woman, who is not given her name because she's quite scarred by it, but she's agreed for the story to be public. And I thought, if that can never happen to anyone again, then it will be worth doing this. And of course, there are hundreds and thousands of women like that. And you know, the mental effects of the menopause were just, I just didn't know anything about them.
It is so shocking. And they're really, you know, when I talk to people like you, I kind of think, come on, guys, this is a class action. You know, this is, why is there, has been, there been such a travesty in healthcare? And every time I read of particularly a high profile woman in her early 50s who takes her own life, I just think, what is the story behind that? You know, what was she being helped? It's classic, isn't it? The average age of menopause is 51. The highest rate of suicide in women is 51. And I was actually just listening to, I think it was an Instagram live that Nadia from Loose Women put out last year, saying that she lost a good 7 to 8 years of her life through anxiety and low mood, depression, and all sorts of other physiological changes. And she just believed that HRT was, you know, the devil in disguise and was going to give her breast cancer and was going to be harmful. And she actually also went to see Dr. Louise Newson, but I mean, there are obviously lots of other doctors available, and hopefully now many more NHS doctors too. And it changed her life. And I think she is also very angry, as am I to a lesser extent, because I didn't suffer so badly. But I clearly lost years in my 40s through ill health, through lack of sleep, through extreme headaches, joint ache, tinnitus, hearing problems, which I'd never connected to losing my estrogen. So there is definitely a major health story stroke scandal to be uncovered here, isn't there?
I think it is massive. I think it is a huge kind of third wave of medical feminism. And I'm one of the reasons I'm really, really obsessed with this story is because of Alzheimer's and the effect of estrogen on the brain, which I've been studying for a whole chapter in my book. And there is this marvellous woman who I think a lot of people know of called Lisa Mosconi, who's written The XX Brain. And she's at Weill Cornell in New York. But her latest studies and brain scans are absolutely fascinating, which show us that your brain changes as much in menopause as it does in pregnancy. It actually alters shape and form. And we really, really need to know that. And we all need to understand that and compensate for it, or get HRT, which will help keep our estrogen levels up in our brain. But when you look at her scans of women, and there's about, she's got about hundreds at the moment, of premenopausal, perimenopausal, and the postmenopausal brain, you can already see the changes happening in the perimenopausal brain. And at that point, that's where all hell breaks loose. And we kind of know that, don't we? Because I always call perimenopause menopause's dastardly little sister. And it is, and for me, you know, I just threw I made a complete mess of my life during perimenopause. So I've learned from that. But anyway, these brain scans show that when the estrogen goes, the brain is basically panicking, going, what am I going to do? My fuel has gone. And gray matter goes down. White matter goes down, the amount of glucose used in the brain goes down. And then after menopause, some of the gray matter starts to come back and it starts to rise again. And what we also do is more blood is pumping to the brain. So we work our brains harder and we get our gray matter back. We don't get all our white matter back. So our connections change. And some people who are perhaps, you know, at risk of Alzheimer's, like myself, because my mother died of Alzheimer's, you know, you look at that and you think, well, how can I look after my brain at that point? Because amyloid plaques build up after menopause, and the amyloid plaques are a sign that you might get Alzheimer's and a sign that things are going wrong. So I'm thinking, what about brain health? What about the 1 in 5 women who get Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's is the biggest killer in Britain. It's not that the estrogen in HRT is going to cure Alzheimer's, but it's going to prevent you having a brain that is ready to get Alzheimer's. If you can keep your brain in the best health possible, just like your body, it's really, really important. And I mean, I feel we're only at the basic beginning of learning the science on this. And, you know, I was talking on a Zoom to Lisa Mosconi yesterday in New York. And I said, so where are the studies? And she said, where are the studies? And there's one study being done on HRT and brain health, a proper, you know, randomized controlled trial. But otherwise, the studies are all observational. But what do you do if you're someone like me and, you know, the 1 in 5 women likely to get Alzheimer's? You think, well, it might be a very good idea to take HRT. You know, if that's my risk level, and my risk level is enormously high for getting Alzheimer's and enormously low for getting breast cancer. So I should have that choice and I should be able to go into my doctor and, you know, she or he should have that knowledge too.
Completely. And that, you know, that is totally about choice. It is our bodies, our choice. I don't know quite why that's been lost. The messaging has been lost, and this whole idea of informed consent and what we should actually be allowed to sign up to. I think we have to remember that our healthcare is there as a service, and that our medics are essentially service providers paid for by ourselves, British taxpayers, to provide the service that we require. And we are allowed to choose, or should be allowed to choose, how we decide to treat, having done the knowledge and knowing how our bodies are more than anybody else, because we've lived in them all our lives. And that, you know, that goes right across the board. And, you know, I'm always really shocked, Kate, and I'm sure you have been too, by how little joined up thinking there is. It seems that medicine operates in silos. So I was at a dinner recently with psychiatrists. And, you know, if a midlife woman goes to see some psychiatric help, you know, the chances are she'll get SSRIs, she'll be put on antidepressants, whatever. And I said, well, you know, do you ever treat with estrogen? And they've sort of looked at me. This is a senior professor I sat next to. He said, well, why would I treat with estrogen? And I said, well, because surely the estrogen receptors that are being lost in the brain are causing anxiety and low mood and depression in perimenopausal and menopausal women. And he sort of looked at me blankly and said, well, we don't learn about hormones. I said, yes, but you are a brain expert. You know, women are being referred to you. and essentially in many cases, I would, you know, put money on it, being given the wrong treatment, because antidepressants are for clinical depression. They're not for loss of estrogen, are they?
And I also think you know the difference between the kind of depression. If you've never been depressed before in your life and you're behaving very oddly and you're very anxious and you're suddenly having panic attacks and depression in your late 40s, you haven't turned into someone else and you haven't changed your life that much. So something else has changed. And I think that's very important. But one of the things I'm trying to do, because I've written this book, and you know, once you've written a book, you actually know the book you really want to write afterwards, because you know so much. And I really am now going to write a book on mental health, change, rebooting, and the menopause and that midlife brain change. And I have met a wonderful psychotherapist called Holly Rubin at The Soak, which is a new, quite radical psychotherapy centre in London. And we are doing a talk together about the menopause and mental health, you know, from the brain point of view, from the body point of view, from the political point of view. And I think if we can start joining up with other professionals on the other side of this story, we can learn so much. Because she was just saying, I've been treating all these women. I haven't been thinking about what are their hormones doing. I've just been thinking about what are their husbands doing. And, you know, it's really important. And for relationships, I really think so many women and would not be, you know, getting divorced. Not that there's anything wrong with getting divorced, but it's 62%.
I totally agree. You know, yeah, I mean, as a divorcee myself, and I see so many of my friends, midlife friends, you know, relationships and marriages in trouble. I'm not saying it's all to do with hormones, but they do play a part when your personality changes. And obviously when sex drive changes and it becomes painful to have sex and you just get that awful flatness. I remember, I think it was Dr. Rebecca Lewis, actually, who I was talking to about this. And she has a particular interest in mental health in midlife. And she was saying that women who lose estrogen from their brains suffer a lack of joy, a loss of joy. There's this, they describe it as just feeling flat.
That's right.
As if nothing really matters. Yeah. And can you imagine just having that flatness in your life? Nothing makes you smile. Nothing brings you joy or laughter, and you know, we're meant to have a range of emotions. You know, we are meant to go kind of up and down and laugh and cry and enjoy life and experience it. But of course, it's not just, you know, mental health or you know, talking about to professions like the psychiatrists. It's rheumatologists. I've got many friends who've been referred for all sorts of things, bone scans and, you know, pre-osteoporosis checks and all of that. And on some of them, on some really quite aggressive and expensive anti-arthritis drugs, who've been transformed just by topping up the estrogen receptors in their bones through having a bit of replacement hormones. I mean, it just seems that we need to get into this kind of mindset of integrated medicine, don't we, that looks at the whole body. Perhaps it's, you know, is that too much to ask, do you think?
And that, you know, that estrogen is such a miracle, particularly coupled with testosterone, which I know you've discussed regularly, but that in terms of muscle and strength, when you've got those two hormones back, you feel so much better. And I'm a runner, and I was running 10Ks just before I went on HRT because I was quite depressed and anxious, and I was really trying to kind of run it off, you know, run off that really itchy, panicky, desperate feeling. And again, about 10 days after taking the HRT, I thought, oh, I'm bionic. All my joints work. Da, 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 da. You know,
it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it? When you get your health back.
Yeah. And that you're rubbery. How nice is it to be rubbery? You know, thank God, you know.
And yeah, if you fall over, you might bounce and not break.
Yeah, and it's such a relief. But I also wanted to talk to you this because you are, you know, you're brilliant on kind of plant-based things. You're brilliant on diets and you're always discussing that. And I know that, you know, the people who listen to your podcast know all about the difference between good HRT and the bad old-fashioned combined HRT made from horse urine. But I think one of the things we really need to talk about publicly to all our friends is that what we are dealing with, that we, you know, the estrogen I get from my GP and the progesterone, you know, is plant-based. is body yes. identical? Is
oh, really
well,
good
you know,
to say that.
It is so yeah. important. And that if when you think about the effect that, you know, vegetables have on the brain, you look at a brain scan of someone who eats McDonald's for 10 years, and you look at the brain scan of someone who eats vegetables for 10 years, particularly at this kind of stage in our lives, and, you know, fish oil, and you look at those two brains, and one of the brains is showing up kind of black holes where there's nothing happening, and the other brain is firing on all cylinders. And you think about what we are putting into our body and our philosophy at the moment, everybody talking about being vegan and everybody talking about plant-based, and you think, why are we not looking at our HRT through those glasses too?
Yeah, to see it. Absolutely. Well, I'm not vegan, and I'm a big advocate of eating meat and high quality protein, especially in midlife. But you're absolutely right. And I think we have to remember, first of all, my take on it is that we're not talking about a medication. This is not a drug. This is simply a natural hormone that we used to have that we're just replacing with the exact body identical natural hormone. But it's made from a plant, so it's made from wild yams. So the utrogestan progesterone that you're taking, that I'm taking, the body identical estrogen, whether that's from a gel or a patch or a spray, anything transdermal, you know, through the skin, is coming from those wild yams. And molecularly, if you looked at it, you know, under a microscope or analysed it, it would be exactly the same. The body knows no difference from the stuff that we used to make when we were younger and the stuff that we apply that comes from wild yams. Maybe if it had a fancier name and came in, you know, some sort of packaging with, you know, vegan friendly written all over it, maybe, you know, pure plant-based power for replenishing, you know, I mean, maybe, I think it was might have been Dr. Louise actually said to me that, you know, HRT does need rebranding because it's had all these dreadful flawed studies published, which were just so wrong. And I did a podcast with Professor Michael Baum, who was the lead oncologist, breast cancer surgeon at the Royal Marsden for years, and did all the original trials on tamoxifen and knows so much about breast cancer and breast cancer risk and treatments. And he said, you know, in the old days, they used to treat breast cancer with estrogen. Yeah. And I said, well, why did it fall out of favour? You know, why was there suddenly this crazy, you know, swing against it? And he just looked at me and he said, Liz, you tell me.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the Women's Health Initiative studies were flawed, but, you know, quite why that should be so polarizing.
Yeah. But as a journalist, I think there are two things here. One is that, you know, women staying young and women of a certain age filling themselves up with strange hormones, there's a real negative sexism in the press about that and the punishment of breast cancer. If you take these fun drugs, you know, there is a very old fashioned sort of stream of consciousness and even a kind of self-guilt among women still running quietly underneath that perhaps made those headlines.
Isn't that so shocking? I think you're absolutely right that, you know, we're not allowed to enjoy ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, if this was all about Viagra, which you can just go and get over the counter, for example, you know, it's women. And I love how you start your book exactly, you know, saying that with, you know, a guy going into the surgery and saying, you know, my penis is getting all dry and wrinkly. It's agony having sex. But what's the point anyway? I don't know why I bother going to bed. I can't sleep more than an hour with these night sweats. And at work, I get so many hot flushes. I have to sneak into the gents to change my shirts. And I have armpits like puddles. Have I mentioned the awful anxiety, the racing pulse? I think I'm having a heart attack. Too scared to drive on motorways. I lost the car in Sainsbury's car park. I'm feeling more and more worthless and depressed. Blah, 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 blah. You know, you say if a guy went and said that to their GP, would they just be dismissed as men's trouble and told to go away and have a hot milky drink, which is what we've heard many women say when talking all of those things through with their doctor? You know, that there is this awful, I mean, I'm don't classify myself as a feminist or even a kind of an activist, but I read Unwell Women. Have you read that book?
I'm just reading it, actually. I just dropped it in the bath last night.
it's an awful read. I mean, it's awful in that sense of the word. I mean, it's shockingly dreadful to read. You can't kind of read more than a few pages at a time because it's such a travesty of healthcare, of what has happened through to women over hundreds of years through all the lobotomies and all the disgusting practices that happened, you know, genital mutilation happening here in the UK during Victorian times. I mean, just dreadful. And do you think we've inherited that legacy of undervaluing female healthcare in our current day?
Absolutely.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I think it is absolutely shocking what has happened around menopause, and not just on the HRT front, but on the other understanding of menopause for those who can't use HRT, like the 1 in 7 women who get breast cancer. And there are some brilliant solutions for them too, and lots of ways of helping them. But they are just left high and dry all the time. And I think we really, really need to fight this. And I know you say you're not a feminist, not a campaigner, not an activist. You are, actually, you really are. And you're doing very good work here. And we're all doing very, very good work together. And I think of all the movements I've seen, this is really incredibly cohesive and very strong, because everybody can come at it from a different direction and come together. But I do think that we are tackling a huge wall of medical sexism and a massive wall of ignorance. And we really, really need to be very, very loud about it. And I think Carolyn Harris, the MP who put through the HRT bill, she is amazing, and she's a great kind of leader of the movement. But I really think we need to talk about it. And one of the things we super need to talk about in the HRT arena is that every study that almost gets cited on HRT is on the old kind of HRT, and that there has not been a proper study of the new plant-based HRT, except on teachers in France. There's been 3 studies in France that are quite good that show breast cancer rates 0 over 5 years on the newer kind of transdermal plant-based HRT, and maybe breast cancer rates incredibly low, if not 0 in 10 years. So basically, there's incredibly good news from France, but it's not big enough. And obviously, it's French, and that seems to be a problem. And you're watching an entire medical industry talk about an old drug, and it's like talking about aspirin. When you're giving someone Nurofen, they have different effects, there are different risks, and it is bonkers. And the fact that no one at the top of the British Menopause Society or anywhere is sitting down and going, why are we sitting with all this old information and giving out old drugs that we know are not good when we could give out better ones? And
I don't really understand the British Menopause Society, because so much of the information is, you know, based on the older forms of HRT, and, you know, as sort of alleged experts, you would have thought that that would have been radically updated. But, you know, what I love about your book, and I'm going to give it a huge unashamed plug now, is that it is different. You talk about women from different sectors coming together. And, you know, when I wrote my book, what is it now, 6 years ago, you know, it was quite a barren landscape. And then we had some really interesting books coming out from celebrities, from people with public profiles, you know, putting it out there, which was great to really kind of sort of normalize and shine a light on it. And lots of great medical books, lots of books written by doctors. But I think what where your real strength is here is you have filled an incredible gap in terms of that campaigning, journalistic, sniffing out the story. You know, you talk about the sloppy science and the hysterical headlines that we've suffered. And as somebody who's worked for national newspapers, you know, you are well versed in how newspapers run stories and how they get their clickbait and their column inches and what makes a headline. And, you know, you've really gone for it with that forensic investigative eye, which is just so important. And your stories are so real and so valid. And, you know, you frame it in such a way, I think, that, you know, you are filling such a great gap. So hats off to you, sister.
Oh, thank you.
I also love the book. And what you've done, which I do in my books as well, is you've fully referenced it at the back. So you put all the medical references. My publishers weren't too keen on that. They thought it was taking up a lot of wasted pages, but I wanted them to go in, as I imagine you did too.
I had all the doctors who are in it read back their chapter. So like Michael Baum in the cancer chapter, and indeed you read your bit that you're in. And actually that was great, because often they added an even more radical line to what we were doing. But it was so important to get this medically right, because I am not medically qualified, but I worked with, you know, some of the best menopause specialists in the world. And it was, you know, a real privilege. And also they were all trapped in lockdown with nothing to do. So I got these Zooms with all these people at Yale that I'm sure I wouldn't
Perfect
have got.
Timing. Now, I want to move on, actually, and talk about your next project, which is the documentaries that you've been making with Davina McCall and the phenomenal success that you had last year with the menopause documentary. Did that come out on International Women's Day, I think?
I can't remember. No, I think around, it came out in May. I'm not quite sure.
Was it in May time? Okay, yeah. I remember it being out in the spring and causing such a stir. I mean, it was sort of long anticipated and awaited by those behind the scenes who knew that it was coming. How did that happen? And tell us a little bit about the background and how it went down. How easy was it to get commissioned?
Absolute nightmare to get commissioned. And also because I'd never made a documentary before, people were going, who do you think you are? Why would you make a documentary with you? And why would we make a documentary about the menopause? All of which turned out to be completely wrong. And so I took it to lots and lots of people and struggled and struggled. And then I found, because I'm a Glaswegian, I found a company in Scotland called Finestripe, and it was largely staffed by menopausal women on HRT. And they took one look at my synopsis and we went, we're doing this. And we took it forward to Channel 4. And at that point, Dorothy Byrne was head of news and current affairs at Channel 4. She's now running a college, but she is absolutely amazing. And she said, I'll do it. She says, we've got to do this. It will be the last thing I commission before she goes. So she did it. Yeah. And the great thing about it was we just didn't know what was going to happen or if anyone was going to watch it. And then on the first night, over a million watched it. But by the end of the week, over 2 million people had watched it on catch up. And we realised it was viral, you know, that people had told their friends and their aunties and their mums. And it really needed to be out there. And so at that point, also, you know, we, as you know, because you're with the menopause charity too and a great campaigner for them, we launched that campaign to give free education to doctors, the proper, you know, long confidence in the menopause course. I think now 18,000 doctors have taken that up since the programme, because it came out the day after.
And that is the way forward, yeah. Isn't it? It's through educating, and it's educating, you know, from the grassroots up as well as from the top down, and hopefully everybody meeting in the middle. Coming back to the making of the documentary, how did you connect with Davina? Did you approach her? Did she approach you? How did that happen?
We had a different presenter, and we got all shut down in lockdown and all the money taken back. So that was a disaster. And then as we re-emerged out of the first lockdown, I was talking to some friends and they said, oh, Davina would be great. We can put you in touch. And I rang Davina and she was driving an hour back home from London. And I talked to her in her car and we talked about our two menopause stories together, kind of immediately, and lots of them were very parallel and similar. you know, and it was that thing that magically happens when you talk to another woman in menopause and they go, oh, well, I had that and I had that. Oh, my God, we both did that. And we had that moment and we just clicked. And she is amazing. And she has learned so much and dedicated time and is always on Twitter at midnight helping people with their problems. And she has, it has been a kind of life-changing thing for her too, that you feel this sort of impetus that you've got to keep doing it. And because every day, you know, one person finds out something they didn't know and you find out something you didn't know and it changes the picture again and it changes one life. And she's become so aware of that. So the second documentary, we are going to be talking a lot about menopause at work and that huge dropout of women losing confidence, you know, anxiety, brain fog. And we're going to talk about the brain, and I think it's going to be called the menopause brain drain. And we're also going to talk about menopausal women who are breast cancer survivors and what they can do, because that was a real kind of bit that was missing in the previous documentary. And we just didn't have room, you know, we just didn't have room to get it all in. We're going to be talking about your favourite subject, testosterone. You're going to enjoy that. Excellent. I've got a good one on that. And I've got a menopausal comedian, I hope. I've got the menopausal stand-up comedian coming on. So who knows quite what we'll have, but I'm researching it right now and gathering.
Fantastic. And I know that you've been in touch with Kirsty Lang because she was in your book, wasn't she?
Yes, she's been brilliant. Because actually, she's helped me the whole way along and told me to go to Dr. Louise Newson way back. But her story of being a breast cancer survivor and then going back on HRT was a really, really powerful story, which became sort of the key part of the breast cancer chapter in my book. Yeah, and she did a lovely podcast with you. I love her podcast with you.
Yeah, well, interestingly, I talked to her in the early days when I was talking to Professor Michael Baum, actually, about treatments for breast cancer. And I think maybe I'd read an interview that she'd done in the Daily Mail or something about surviving breast cancer. And she was passionate about getting intraoperative radiotherapy for breast cancer patients rather than turning up, you know, day after day, week after week for this invasive radiotherapy that can damage your heart, particularly if it's over the left side. And so she had intraoperative radiotherapy and she was campaigning for that. So she was kind of on my radar. And I just, you know, reached out to her out of the blue, really, and said, would she come onto the podcast and talk about it? And it turned out that she had very recently decided to go back onto HRT because her quality of life following her surgery and her lack of hormones was so devastating that she was probably going to have to stop working. And, you know, she's very high profile on BBC. And this plays very much to your point, you know, talking with your documentary about women in the workplace. And so we did this podcast and she talked about the HRT that she was being given and the choices she decided to make. And funny enough, I was in text conversation with her recently and I just said, oh, by the way, you know, how are you doing? Because I often think we put that podcast out there now many years ago and, you know, it'd be devastating if she then, you know, had major health issues, you know, following on. And I said, you know, how's it going? And she replied here, she said, hi, Liz, I'm well, thanks. Still on HRT and now testosterone and feeling good on it. Breast cancer has not reappeared. It's now been 5 years. So my quote experiment seems to be working. So that is a good news.
Can I tell
update.
You a lovely perhaps end to all this, which is I had lunch with Kirsty and her mum on Monday. And her mum is in my book. She's 85. She's on HRT. And Kirsty, so we sat and had lunch together. And her mum had been sent by her doctor, age 85, for a bone density scan, because he felt that her bones wouldn't be, you know, any good. And he said, I've never seen bones like these. She says these are the best preserved bones of an 85-year-old we've ever seen. And she's been on HRT since she was on her 40s. She took a little break and then she went back on it.
Isn't that amazing? So, I just wish that, you know, osteoporosis doctors would talk more about that, to be honest. There's so much focus on bisphosphonates and other forms of treatment, and that's yet another hill that we need to climb and plant flags on.
Yeah.
But I'm very interested in your work on the workplace. Have you, you know, looked at studies showing just how many women are being lost in throughout industries and all the professions, nursing, teaching, the judiciary, it's staggering, isn't it? Business owners, how many women give up in midlife due to losing hormones?
Well, we're doing a big survey, I hope. So I'll know the answer to that question when the documentary comes out. But I mean, quite clearly, the number of people not going for promotion, the number of people going part-time, the number of people leaving a big job and becoming a consultant, it's absolutely clear to me. And one of the main things I'm really interested in is what happens to key workers, the people we clapped during lockdown, and those nurses and teachers, you know, the people who are on their feet 12 hours a day. They can't sit down and put a little desk fan on and have a little break if they've got a patient to look after. That's just not going to happen in A&E. So how do they cope? And they need the best medical advice and the best help with all their symptoms. And it's not just enough to have a workplace policy. You need to tackle what's going wrong in women's bodies, I think, and minds, and really, really help them at that base level. And I think a lot of people are jumping on the sort of workplace bandwagon, saying how marvellous they are and how wonderful it is to talk about it. But we don't just need talk. We absolutely need action, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we totally need both. And it's all very well, you know, talking about it and having a policy, but it has to be implemented, and it has to be implemented by healthcare providers who are knowledgeable and have confidence in what they're prescribing. You mentioned testosterone. Is that going to feature in the documentary?
Oh, yes, but I can't reveal in what way yet. But we are doing some quite exciting experiments that have never been done. With some great women who are helping us with the tests. So we'll see.
Fantastic. Well, I just love the way that Davina comes across, because, of course, she's just got such a huge audience, and she's so well loved from all her different TV shows. You know, she's really, I think, bringing the menopause message to a new audience that perhaps haven't heard it before. So it's going to be extraordinary. And when's your transmission date? When can we put it in our diaries?
I think end of April, beginning of May. We don't know yet.
Okay, but you're obviously super busy promoting the book. Before you go, can I just ask you about your experience with these so-called bioidentical hormones? You mentioned that in the early stages of your own journey, you went for these bioidenticals, which, if maybe people aren't aware of them, but there are unscrupulous, highly profiteering private clinics that offer these unregulated, you know, supposedly completely natural, safe bioidentical hormones. What was your experience with that?
Well, I had real trouble getting any help from my GP twice, and I had heart palpitations. So I ended up, all my friends told me the secret and told me to go to a private clinic in London, where I was given lozenges, which you suck. And the lozenge contained estrogen, progesterone and testosterone. Great. Everything improved for a year. I'm feeling absolutely fantastic. Then I got a new batch of lozenges and I was sucking it. And I was thinking, that tastes different. Wonder why that tastes different. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I started getting lots and lots of bleeding. And I realised there was something wrong, and I went back to the clinic. They charged me £600 for a scan, and they said, oh, your womb lining looks okay-ish. Here's a new prescription, pay £100 for that. I did that, and then I went on bleeding, and I got really worried. And so I stopped HRT, and I went to the NHS, and they said, you can go on the cancer test fast track, which is done within 2 weeks if you go in with uterine bleeding.
Gosh, that's scary.
So then I had a cervical biopsy, a uterine biopsy, a hysteroscopy, everything you could possibly have. Actually, I was fine, but and I showed them the lozenges I'd been taking, and they didn't say anything about them. And these are two very senior consultants at a London hospital. They said, well, if those are all right, you should just keep taking them. I thought, like, as if I'd show them sweeties or something. I don't think they knew what they were. And they did have what the ingredients were on them. Anyway, you know, dreadful time after that. And then indeed, Kirsty Lang intervened in my life and said, go off and see Dr. Louise Newson. And then, of course, well, we realised I wasn't getting enough progesterone. And when I doubled the amount of progesterone I needed, it protected my womb lining. And I'm fine now. And I haven't, you know, I haven't had bleeding. And so it was a mad thing to go through. And I think what was in those lozenges changed. And they are from unlicensed pharmacies. You just don't know what's been mixed up in each potion, or how long it will last, or what's in it, or is it the right amount? So I am very interested in investigating that, and indeed hoping to get samples from women to investigate too, because I'm really, really keen. But it's a big risk going to somewhere where you don't necessarily know what you're getting.
No, I know that the same goes for the creams that you rub on, like the progesterone cream, which again, there's no clinical studies to show the level of protection it offers against uterine cancer. And these things are extremely expensive. I had a friend who, again, she was, you know, very well to do, and she went to one of these private clinics in London. I think she ended up paying £1,400 for her appointment and her bag. It came in a brown paper bag, unknown compounded hormones, you know, supposedly made specially for her in a lab, but she didn't know what it was because there was, you know, no details on it. And she started taking these things, a week or so kind of went by. She then flew to New York and started to bleed quite heavily, called the clinic, and they said, well, we can fit you in 10 days time for a telephone appointment with the head practitioner. That'll be another £100 for the phone call. And she said, you have just, you know, potentially seriously damaged my health. I have just paid you £1,400 for this bag of whatever it is. I have no idea what's in it. And you can't even, you know, pick up the phone and sort out my problem. And, you know, this is from a registered doctor, somebody registered with the GMC. And I just think these private clinics, they get around it by saying that the supplements or the hormones are, you know, food supplements, and that's why they're not regulated. And they're allowed to sell. And they sell on fear, I think, in my mind, because they often say, well, of course, it's completely natural, so therefore it's safe. But natural doesn't always mean safe, does it?
And also you can get all of this, apart from the testosterone, and we're working on that, you can get the really good stuff on the NHS. And you just need to be able to ask for it and know what to ask for.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, like all of this. And as we say, it is the body identical. And I think that that's one of the issues, isn't it, that people are changing the words around body identical, bio-identical. It kind of means the same thing, but it could. The difference really is between regulated and unregulated, isn't it? You know, I think people should be asking for regulated body identical hormones rather than unregulated body identical, which tends to be the expensive, compounded kind. Kate, it's great to chat. I just feel that we've hopefully opened a few more eyes and ears and taken the conversation onto yet another level. I'm delighted to hear that you have a further book in the pipeline. Is this going to be your life's work now, do you think? Are you going to be just totally embedded in your writings and your TV work with menopause?
I don't know. It seems sort of unstoppable at the moment. And I feel like I've got so much more to do. And, you know, I'll see you in a year or two's time. But I've got to do an American book. I've got to do a book on mental health. I've got to finish this documentary. You know, and I've got to walk my dog, you know, it's this, how can we do it?
We do it because we're full of amazing hormones. Yeah. It's been great to chat. Your book is out now and we are thrilled to have you here talking about it. Very best of luck with it and look forward to connecting again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz.
And thanks again to Kate, whose book, Everything You Need to Know About the Menopause, subhead but were too afraid to ask, is out this week, and it's published by Simon and Schuster. Well worth a read, but be warned, you might well need to sip something calming alongside, such as a nice chamomile tea, or more likely a stiff gin, as some of her research into female healthcare, the sexism bias and appalling lack of evidence-based decision making that has been just so damaging to women's healthcare is quite breathtaking. Well, on that note, I shall sign off, wishing you a happy and healthy weekend if you're listening to me in real time, and a great week ahead. Don't forget to check out the Lizelle Wellbeing YouTube channel, because there's lots going live there at the moment, as well as online on our website, especially when it comes to keeping any healthful New Year resolutions that you may have made, which, well, maybe just might be slipping, and some really excellent motivational exercise updates too. And you'll find the links to these and much more, of course, as always, over on lizellewellbeing.com. So until the next time we speak, go well. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.